What's going on? What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of the Success is Within Reach podcast, season 3, episode 2, Mental Health Matters. One more time, season 3, episode 2, Mental Health Matters. At this time, I want to introduce myself, Shannon Smith. I will be your host, and my co-host this evening is joining us again. She was here in season 2, did an incredible, incredible job. She's back once again, Miss Christina Leslie. How are you doing, ma'am?
Hello, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I see you rocking your Delta sweater. I want to send a shout out to you. I know it's your Founders Day today.
Happy Founders Day, Sir Ross.
Oh, man. Before we get started, ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind everybody you can join in the conversation and submit your questions and comments at www.facebook.com/SIWRpodcast. One more time, you can join in the conversation and submit your questions and comments at www.facebook.com/SIWRpodcast. All right, let's get into it. So first up, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you chose a profession in the mental health field.
Okay, well, actually, this month is actually my 10th year in the mental health field. So I've been doing various works in the mental health field, working with kids, adolescents, young adults, older adults. And so I have a vast range in the mental health field, like I said. I'm a licensed professional counselor in Louisiana, as well as a qualified mental health professional counselor in Louisiana, national certified counselor, and certified telemental health counselor. So those are a few letters that I do have behind my name, but working on more hopefully this year. As far as my start, I received my undergrad degree at LSU in psychology, and then I went to The Southern University to get my master's in mental health counseling with a certification in school counseling. And where I received my passion, I would say, would be from Dr. Leonard Moore at LSU. What he did is to help create with some other students at LSU a mentorship program for youth in the community, in which we did different projects with them. We took them out of the state to give them a different outlook on life and to learn different things. So from that, I think that's when my passion started to grow into working in not only in the mental health field, but also with youth. Currently, I'm a school counselor at an elementary school, and I have my own private practice on the side.
Nice. For those that don't know, last season, like I said, she was here, did a phenomenal job. We had a mental health episode, and you guys, she actually had the most viewed episode of my whole season 2 for Successes with Her. Wow. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen, like I said, get your questions in, get a pad, take notes. You know, mental health is something that we can't talk about enough. You know, mm-hmm. Everybody needs to grab hold of their mental health, their emotional health, because your mental health can end up affecting so many different parts of your life. So mm-hmm. Strap up your boots and let's get to it. So with so many stigmas surrounding mental health illnesses and therapy, how do you get someone to ignore said stigmas and get them to go and seek assistance?
Mm-hmm. So I think with that, I'll say that with social media and entertainment streams, it's really getting out there how important mental health is, whether it's different podcasts, whether it's different shows on TV having discussions about mental health. TV shows that are talking about, you know, the characters going to therapy, like Insecure when Miley went to therapy, and this new show that I watch, I think it's Crew Love, I believe, on one of the national TV shows where they talked about Black men going to therapy. And so, you know, just getting the word out there, making it normal. We all have mental health. Just like we have physical health, we have mental health, and we have to make that conversation as normal as possible and continue to get the word out there, especially with platforms like this, to continue to have discussions on what mental health is, what it means, and also, you know, having those resources out there to help people that want to, you know, get a grasp on their mental health. I think that, you know, continuing to treat mental health like physical health. We all go to the doctor if we feel like we have a cold, the flu, COVID nowadays. You know, we make sure we go to urgent care. We make sure we go to the hospital or to our PCP for those things. We have to make sure that we have things in place for our mental health as well. It might be going to therapy. It might be going to a group therapist or getting medication to regulate your mood. Or it might be just to find healthy, positive coping skills that you can do throughout the day. But, you know, we have to make sure that we take care of our mental health as well.
Is there one particular demographic that you see that struggles with, you know, seeking assistance more? You know, I know for guys, it's been a huge taboo thing, but are you still seeing that it's more guys having issues coming to seek assistance than the ladies?
I still see that, especially with my practice growing within a pandemic. It's been a lot of females and, you know, few male clients that I do have. But, you know, I do see an increase in male clients going to therapy, which is a good thing. You know, we have, like I say, we have to have those conversations, especially men. You know, when you're around your friends, you can say, you know, I'm going to my therapist today, or this is something that my therapist and I talked about, what you think about it, or, you know, just bringing up those conversations like we talk about everything else. That's something that we have to normalize as well. And also, you know, help your friends say, you know, this is my therapist, maybe you want to check them out, you know, and seeing what you feel is needed as far as therapy. And so, you know, there's on Instagram, there's a vast majority of mental health apps or pages that you can go on to where they're talking about Black men and mental health. And so just stepping in that direction to just, you know, understand what it's all about. And then from there, finding what makes you more comfortable as far as, you know, getting your mental health in check.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely glad to hear that, you know, there's an increase, you know, in the fellas coming to seek assistance. You know, it's it's one of those things. I don't know how we completely overcome, you know, the stigmas that guys have, you know, other than, like you said, continuing to have conversations, and those that have sought therapy, you know, sharing their experiences, because, you know, guys, we just keep so much bottled up, and then we end up imploding, you know, and then that toxicity leaks out in several different aspects of our life, you know. And fellas, you got to understand, if you want to be a great husband, if you want to be a great father, if you want to be a great brother, if you want to be even a great son to your parents, like, you have to address what's going on within. Like, you can't keep it bottled up. I know we all like to think that we're Superman and we can take on the world, but guess what? We all have emotions. We all hurt. We all have trauma. We all have, you know, times that cause anxiety or depression or whatever the case may be. Find someone, you know, find someone. And I can tell you, you may not get the right therapist or the right counselor the first time, maybe not even be the second time, but keep going until you find someone. You know, don't just sit at home, try to solve everything yourself. Definitely don't try to drink or, you know, use substances to get rid of it, because it's only going to exacerbate the problem. Like, I promise you, it's not going to help.
And like I tell clients, you know, I say, you know, even when I have new clients and clients that's just trying to get more information, I say, you know, you have to go out there and figure out, you know, yes, this is a counselor or a therapist I'm trying to work on, but maybe this is not the right fit. I say, it's just like trying on shoes. You got to try them on till you get the right fit. And, you know, it's your sessions, it's your therapy, it's your money that's being used, your insurance, and your time. And so with all of that, you have to make sure that you have somebody that you can, you know, feel comfortable in sharing things with. And it's okay. Some therapists, you know, aren't for you, and that's okay. And that's normal. But just, you know, they can also help guide you to make sure that you find the right person for you.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely want to add in there too, for all of my vets, please, please, if you don't feel comfortable with somebody at the VA, go and find somebody. It's too many vets that are out here struggling on a daily basis with things that happen while you were in the military or as you were transitioning out of the military, whatever the case may be, and they're struggling in silence. Like, please, please go and find someone that you can talk to. I cannot stress that enough. So I want to transition a little bit. A lot of us have family members that we see that are going through crises. You know, and a lot of times we tell them, you know, hey, maybe you should go and talk to someone. And, you know, whether they can't get past the stigma or whether they just think they can do it all on their own and they're just shutting everybody down. At what point should family members step in and make a decision when they see a relative spiraling and refusing to get help?
So usually a lot of family members step in when that particular person is trying to harm themselves, harm other people, whether it be excessive drinking or substance abuse, like you mentioned earlier, or it could be a decrease or increase into activities of daily living. And what that basically means is anything that we do on a daily basis, if you see an increase of that or a decrease in that, there might be signs of, you know, wanting to kind of check in on those people. It could be some abuse or neglect because, you know, sometimes with trauma, you know, it can be existential in which, you know, the things that happen internally, you can unfortunately put that on other people. And so those are some things to look at as well. A change in your mood can happen as well. So if you know that a family member is always perky or happy, but you don't hear from them like you used to, or they're always down or seem depressed, or, you know, their affect is different, which is, you know, the way that they usually look. You know, those are some things that you can look at as far as to reach out to them, show them support and ask them, you know, I see a change in you. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if you feel comfortable in telling me what's going on, but what are some ways that I can help support you? And just opening up that can kind of get them to either, you know, entrust you with telling you what's going on, or at least, you know, help them to get some much needed help.
So how do you, I guess, have, you know, the family come together to let them know, hey, we're here for you. You don't have to fight whatever this is alone without them feeling like you guys set me up and bombarded me with an intervention, so to say.
Yeah, so that can be, you know, tricky in many situations and many families and based on personalities and what's going on, how to approach, you know, that person that is struggling with their mental health. So it might be first, you know, getting one person that you know that they have a good rapport, a good relationship with, to kind of talk to them, you know, maybe bring them outside or, you know, have them go on a walk or just have a conversation with them or do something that they usually like to do to kind of get them to open up, you know, not necessarily have like a group session with that person because that can sometimes turn for the worst. And so, you know, maybe pinpoint that one person, you know, in your family to say, you know, can you check on, you know, so-and-so so we can try to see how to best help them. There's situations where, you know, it can be less severe where you can have that discussion with that person and they might, you know, acknowledge it and want to get help or at least acknowledge it and maybe take some steps to try to get better. And there's some situations where it can be more severe where, you know, you've done all the talking, you did the family planning and, you know, talk to the person, it's still not working and you're still concerned. And that's when you'll probably have to try to get them to a hospital so they can do a reset with a hospitalization, or, you know, you can do a power of attorney if you see that there's neglect going on and get, you know, make sure that there's somebody that's responsible enough in the family to, you know, help take care of their needs. Or you could just ask the family member what can be done. As far as resources, outside resources, if, you know, you're kind of stuck, you know, with trying to help your family members, you might want to look at NAMI, which is the National Alliance for Mental Illness, in which they have different groups for families on how to best handle, you know, different family members, whether they're going through substance abuse, their vets, They might be going through depression, anxiety. There's a multitude of mental health issues that people go through, but there's support for families as well. Then there's also Families Helping Families, and there's a New Orleans and Baton Rouge location for both, where they also assist families in making sure that, you know, those people get what they need. And so, you know, there's mental health advocates, so you don't have to feel like you have to deal with this by yourself. We're trying to help your family member. There's, you know, a multitude of resources that you can use to help. But I think, you know, the first step in trying to help a family member that's going through something is to, you know, take that small step just to try to see how you can best support them, and then have that one person that they might have a good relationship with to kind of, you know, break down some of those walls to make sure that they get that needed support.
And I also wanted to ask you too, while we're talking about family, because it came up in a past show, how does a parent know when their child, in particular through the adolescent years, is going through a mental health crisis versus what most people chalk up to normal teenage defiance?
Well, you know, I think the two go hand in hand, because you're still dealing with your, you know, mental state, your mental health. And so, you know, you can see a change in your child, whether they're staying in their room more than how they usually are, whether, you know, they're eating more or eating less. They're more irritable. Some, unfortunately, kids get into drugs and alcohol at young age. And so, you know, those are some things to look at. Even some of their friends might, you know, pull you to the side to talk to the parent to say, you know, look, my friend is, you know, going through something. They didn't want me to tell you, but I think some help, you know, is needed. I had a similar situation a few weeks ago at my school where a parent called because their child was concerned about their friend. And so having that rapport and that relationship with their friends as well, and then have those conversations to say, look, I know y'all are kids. Social media is crazy when it comes to, you know, teens and adolescents. But, you know, if things are going on that, you know, that you feel uncomfortable with, or, you know, you just want to talk about without, you know, the parent getting upset, you know, have those opportunities to where, you know, it could be a no holds bar, non-judgmental moment where you can have those conversations so they can feel safe in bringing up those problems to you. And if for any reason you just can't, you know, you and your child just can't get to it, or, you know, have issues with just having those type of hard conversations, suggest therapy. Some kids are suggesting it for themselves. And so having that, you know, that outside person to either talk to them and or talk to you about how to have those conversations, or just coming up with resources and coping skills and ways to assist, that can also be, you know, a way that can help the family as well.
I think that's absolutely awesome that nowadays you're seeing where sometimes the kid is saying, hey, I want to go to therapy. You know, like a lot of times parents would have to drag their kids to therapy. Like, no, you're going to go talk to someone. And it just goes downhill from there. So I think that's so dope that nowadays kids are understanding the importance of it and saying, okay, I don't feel comfortable talking to mom or dad, but I need to talk to somebody about what's going on in my head and everything. I absolutely love that. But I also wanted to ask, because you just sparked my mind on something else you just said, how big do you think social media plays a part on the mental health of today's teenagers and young adults? Like, is it overrated, or is it actually as big of an issue as people think it is?
I personally think that it's a bigger issue than, you know, what's being reported or what's being talked about, because those kids are so engulfed in their phones and social media about what he said, she said, you know, appearances, and it's all on a phone. And, you know, in trying to break them away from that or trying to punish them, you know, it can be excessive to them. And that's the, you know, the unfortunate truth. And it's just trying to rewire their brains or get them to do other things that don't involve, you know, a phone, is something to, you know, have that conversation about, or, you know, start off early. Maybe, you know, your child might be 10, 13 years old. Maybe don't get them a phone at that point in time, or, you know, the computer, the gaming systems, you know, all of that plays a role in, you know, what's going on in kids' lives and kids' thought process and their brain makeup and all of that, you know, compared to when we were growing up, you know, going outside, playing, trying to ride the bike, you know, now kids are stuck in their room playing the games, yelling at the games, cursing and stuff. And so, I mean, it's a different breed of kids these days, but it really is something to look at as far as the media, you know, social media, as far as how it's affecting our kids today.
Mm-hmm. Man, it's, yeah, you're right. It's just such a completely different world. You know, when you look at, like you said, when we came up, your biggest decision was, what are we playing when we get out of school today?
Exactly.
You know, and now you got kids that are being bullied by a whole school, you know, and you're coming home having to have suicide talks or substance abuse talks and all kind of stuff. It's just absolutely bananas.
Group chats and everything.
Yeah, yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to our first break. Once again, this is the Successes Within Reach podcast, season 3, episode 2, Mental Health Matters. We'll be right back after this break. I'm ready to get the ball. All right. Welcome back. So now I want to get into something that I feel like probably 10 out of 10, if not 9 out of 10 adults deal with. And that's childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of us walk around daily, you know, not sure why we are the way we are until we go and get help and people get us to realize it's actually because of something that happened in your childhood that was left unresolved. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you didn't get the apology that you always look for. So I want to ask you, just how impactful can childhood trauma be on us as adults if it's left unresolved?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it has negative effects. And I want to say that just because people deal with traumatic experiences as a child doesn't mean that they will grow up and, you know, experience negative impacts because of that. So, you know, with that, with the people that possibly can exhibit some of those negative impacts, it can have a toll on relationships that you have, connections, socially, it can impact you as well as your safety and regulating emotions. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we have to make sure that we, first of all, recognize that sometimes we don't. Sometimes something might trigger you and you might say, you know, where is this coming from? And, you know, once you start thinking about your past, you realize, you know, I experienced something that was traumatic. I never really dealt with it, never really processed it. And now I'm an adult in here. I am trying to, you know, make sense of everything while trying to, you know, continue to grow up. Because, you know, we're always growing up. We're always evolving. We're always changing. And so, you know, with that understanding, now what, since, you know, you're dealing with that traumatic experience as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on real quick, we had a comment I want to make sure that I'll let you address. He says, one of the most discouraging things I've been running into is the constant changing of therapists by the VA. Once I tell my story to one therapist, 9 therapists later, I'm retelling the same stressful event. Why is that? Does anybody write anything down? And he also says, that on top of that, he has a duffel bag of medication and says, are they saying he's a human test subject? So what advice would you give him if he's been passed around from therapist to therapist in the sense of going to the VA?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that within itself can be traumatic because, like he's saying, he's, you know, continuously telling his story that, you know, I'm sure it isn't easy for him to tell in the first place and having it to continue to tell it to other people. Mm-hmm. One thing that I do suggest if, you know, he has to continue going to the VA for therapy is maybe writing it down. And so, you know, when he has, unfortunately, has a new therapist, he can give them the paper to say, you know, you can read my story. You know, this is what I've been working on already. And this is, you know, where I want to start. Mm-hmm. Another suggestion would be, you know, to try to find an outside therapist. You know, unfortunately, you know, with the VA and other, you know, mental health agencies, it can be a revolving door for a multitude of reasons. And so, you know, with an outside therapist, you have a better chance of having someone that's, you know, that's more readily available for you. And, you know, you don't have to necessarily see a change within them. As far as the medication part is concerned, I say get a second opinion. You know, I'm always, you know, advocate for people getting second opinions, whether it be their mental and or, you know, physical health. If you feel that, you know, something isn't right, or you just want to make sure that maybe the medications that you're taking are supposed to be the medications that you're taking, or seeing if there's something that you're not supposed to be taking, or you don't have to take, you know, as much of, you know, get that second opinion from that psychiatrist to see, you know, if there's anything that you can do maybe to decrease the amount that you're taking, or maybe just to educate you on the reasons why you're taking the medications that you are taking.
I love that. I love that. Because, I mean, it's not a one size fits all. You know, like we talked about before, sometimes you have to go around and play musical chairs until you find that one person that you click with and is giving you solutions that actually fit your life and not give you something that you feel like is just cookie cutter, that they're just reading a script and giving you the same answers that they're telling everybody else. All right. So back on for this segment, as far as childhood trauma. So a lot of us have, you know, like I said, issues that we're dealing with from our childhood, things that happened or we wish had happened, or, you know, PTSD moments that happen and whatnot. How do we as adults go about having that conversation with our parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whatever, about the effects of our childhood traumas that they ignored or avoided talking about, or we feel like they didn't protect us from? How do we have that conversation to where it's progressive and we don't end up just completely unloading 20, 30, 40 years worth, you know, worth of frustration and anger on them?
Well, that process, you know, it can be hard because you have to realize that sometimes those family members that you want to have those conversations with, they could, you know, not realize that what you went through was something that's traumatic. It can also be a situation where they knew it was a traumatic experience, but it's not something that they're comfortable in sharing with you or wanting to process. And, you know, another thing is that, you know, they might be in denial about the situation. And so those are some things that you do have to take into consideration prior to trying to have those conversations with those family members. You can look at it in a sense of, am I doing this for them or am I doing this for me? And, you know, if it's something that you feel that you have to address, you have to make sure you say, you know, I might not get the outcome that I want from this particular person or group of people. But, you know, the reason why I'm telling my story is to make sure that I process and I go through, you know, what I went through to make sure that I was heard. And then I can then start the healing process.
So how do we, I guess, go about finding closure when we do that and we never get the apology that we seek?
So what you can do is, you know, acknowledge the fact that you may or may not get that apology, and the fact that, you know, you have to find ways that you can heal from that, knowing that you're not going to get that apology. But what have you, you know, learned? What have you taken from this experience that you can then use in your life to help cope with, you know, whatever triggers that you do have that might come up from that particular traumatic experience? So, you know, it's a process. It's not something that's going to be, you know, worked on or, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not something that is just going to be, you know, I'm going to figure it out one day and then the next day it'll be wiped clean. You know, it is a process. It does take time. You know, you might be the one, you know, instead of getting that apology, you might say, you know what, I didn't get that apology, but, you know, it stops here. I'm going to stop that unhealthy generational cycle and I'm going to do things differently. And from that, you might get some backlash because, you know, family members, they like to see that cycle. That's what that's normal for them. But you have to, you know, say enough is enough. And, you know, I'm going to do things different. I'm going to do things healthy so we can continue to, you know, build on having a healthy family relationship.
I definitely agree with everything you just said. Like those generational cycles, man, that can be a podcast in itself. Like too many of us have things in our families where we're like, okay, this was going on in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s. Like, fam, at what point is somebody going to say enough is enough?
Exactly.
Like, we can't all be cool with what's going on. Like, come on, y'all.
Exactly. And then that person that says enough is enough usually gets that backlash, unfortunately. But you'll have a few people to say, you know what, you're right. You know, it is a, you know, there is a difference, or, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, having our family, you know, do X, Y, and Z that we know is not right. Let's move on, or let's, you know, do something in a healthier way so we can, you know, stop that generational cycle.
Definitely. Like, that's one thing that I like about this current generation being so open and honest about their mental and emotional health. I feel like we're able to now start putting a stop to, you know, more generational curses, generational cycles, traumatic cycles, and so forth, you know, because a lot of us are saying, okay, this happened. Nobody did anything about it. Nobody talked about it. Nobody apologized for it. Nobody stopped it. I can't allow this to go on with my family. You know, I can't allow this to go on with generations to come. You know, whether it's substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, whatever the case may be, you know, somebody has to put a stop to it. And I really feel like the more we have these mental health talks and emotional health talks, the more people can, you know, get the tools and resources that they need to have the courage, you know, to put a stop to a lot of this and stand up to, you know, our elders. I know a lot of times it's hard. You don't want to tell mom or dad or grandma or whoever, like, hey, I know you think this is fine because it's been going on in the family 30, 40 years, but it's not cool. You know, it's not cool. It should not happen. I'm not going to allow it to happen with my family or with my children, whatever the case may be. You know, so sometimes, like you say, you just got to put your foot down, but you got to find that peace for you. You know, because one of the sad parts of life and the hardest parts of life is accepting the apology that you'll never get.
Correct.
Like that is one part about life that just sucks.
Exactly. It'll be nice to get an apology, trust me. But sometimes you just don't get it because that person is not in, you know, the same healing process that you're in to wanting to do that. And, you know, for whatever reason, whatever excuse, you know, that they might have, you know, it could be a reason why they won't give you that apology. But, you know, knowing that, you can say, okay, I'm not going to get it, but you know, life continues and life has to move on.
Yeah. Like I can recall a good friend of mine talking about how he talked with his dad and his grandpa about, you know, things that went on in their family. And you know, he was just looking for some type of empathy, not even sympathies, you know, so to say. And just the look on in his face when he told me his grandpa looked him square in the eyes. It was like, but you're still alive, right?
Like,
and he was like, what do I do with that? You know? And it's those type of things that, you know, just make you want to go crazy sometimes. But like you say, you're doing this for you. Your healing journey, your peace journey is for you. It's not for anyone else's behalf.
Correct.
All right. And I want to pivot just a little bit and still addressing traumas and everything. When you're in a relationship, you know, a lot of times when you're getting to know someone, you know, finding out about their past, whatever it may be, and they share things with you. Is there anything that you should not do when you're in a relationship and your partner shares, whether it's a relationship trauma or a childhood trauma? You know, a lot of times we just want to jump in and be superwoman or superman. Is there anything that we shouldn't do when people are sharing their past experiences?
Yeah, I think, you know, what you said, you know, not to necessarily jump in and try to fix the situation, because it might be a situation where, you know, you can't fix it. And, you know, first acknowledging that, and then also acknowledge with your partner, you know, the appreciation for them to be vulnerable and brave in letting you know whatever, you know, relationship or past childhood trauma that they've adult trauma that they experienced, you know, they were, you know, vulnerable enough to tell you what's going on. And so, you know, with that, take that information. It could be, you know, just a shareable thing. Or if you feel that it's something that you want to try to assist, ask them, you know, what are some ways that you can best support them if, you know, they're in a situation where they might feel triggered or need some additional support. You know, ask them, what can you do as their partner to try to help them through those situations?
So are there, you know, like any conversation starters, or do you just fall back and wait for them to bring up certain topics and certain conversations?
I think just, you know, having open conversations, you know, especially when you're starting out dating, you might, you know, talk about past experiences and things of that nature. If you feel comfortable talking to your partner during that time, that's fine. Or you can say, you know, some things happened in my past. I don't feel comfortable talking about it now, but hopefully down the line, you know, it's something that we can discuss. And so, you know, having those conversations, making, you know, hard conversations to be normalized, to say, you know, yes, these things happen to me, you know, I might be fine, or, you know, there might be some things or some anniversaries or, you know, certain things that happen that might trigger me to feel a certain way, you know, before those things get, you know, into the way, here are some things that maybe you can do, or, you know, these are some things I do when those moments happen. So, you know, you can keep the conversation going and you know, what's expected if, you know, those traumatic experiences do play a part, you know, in the day-to-day lives of that person.
Mm-hmm. And in particular, in the case of a person having past relationship trauma, you know, whether it was domestic abuse or, mm-hmm. you know, anything similar to that, you know, I know you learn different things that trigger them physically, but are there any things that their partner should look for to not do, you know, to trigger them emotionally or mentally, or, you know, how do they maneuver around them without feeling like they have to tiptoe around them because of what the previous person did?
Yeah. I mean, that can be, you know, hard in the beginning, but like I said, it's all about that open line of communication. And, you know, it might be a situation where, you know, your partner might raise their voice and it could be a possible trigger, you mm-hmm. know, at that, either at that moment or, you know, prior to when talking about different triggers, you know, discuss, you know, when you raise your voice, I might feel this certain way. And, you know, having that person to be aware of, because, you know, sometimes sitting on the other side of someone who hasn't, you know, been through any traumatic experiences or things that, you know, really affect them, you might not be, you know, cognizant of the things that you do to your partner until, you know, you actually verbalize and tell them what's going on and the reasons why. And then you can say, okay, next time I might not raise my voice, or if I do raise my voice, you know, I'll follow back and say, you know, with an apology, or, you know, have a discussion then on how to effectively communicate. You know, as far as, you know, other things, as far as the relationship, if your partner is telling you some things that happened in the past, you know, try to put those things in the back of your mind to not do them again, you know, do them to that person, because that can bring a lot up with that person. They can not trust you, you know, they can, you know, start looking at you funny, or, you know, backing away from the relationship because of things that they were vulnerable in telling you. Now they might feel that you're using that, you know, to their advantage. So, you know, it takes some time, it takes some learning, you know, some learning curves, you know, it's not a cookie cutter way of dealing with those situations. And so, you know, like I said, communication is the best way to deal with that. And if, you know, you feel that you communicated, you know, trying to work on things, but, you know, you still see that there are some issues going on with trying to best support your partner, go to couples counseling so you can have that unbiased person to hear both sides and then try to help you both to maneuver through the relationship in a more healthy way.
Mm-hmm. And you just said something so key, you know, remember when you're in that relationship and you're both going through something, she said, both of you go to couples counseling. Don't tell that person, hey, you got something going on with you, I think you need to go to counseling. Like, that is not going to remedy the situation.
For me to just talk about you, you come too.
Exactly. It's a we here.
Exactly.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, once again, this is the Successes Within Reach podcast, season 3, episode 2, Mental Health Matters. I'm joined by my guest, Christina Leslie, and we're heading to our second break. We'll be right back. This break is brought to you by Breakthrough Kings. All right. Welcome back. All right. So I want to get into self-care. You know, it's become a buzzword. However, it's such a super, super important concept.
Yes.
You know, What are some great ways to create healthy boundaries with your family and friends and your job and your relationship to still ensure that you're making enough time for self-care? You know, often we get so wrapped up in our work week and then trying to, you know, some of us have to take care of family members. Mm-hmm. Then at the same time, you're making time for your relationship and you look up, it's the end of the week and you're like, man, it's time to start a work week all over again. I haven't made any time for myself. Mm-hmm. So what are some healthy ways to create boundaries in each of those facets of life to make sure that you still have time for yourself?
I think the first thing to do is write down what you're trying to do. So is, you know, are you feeling like you need boundaries in your relationship? Do you feel like you need boundaries within work, with your friends, with your family? You know, first categorize where you feel that your priorities are set as far as making boundaries. Once you do that, write down what it's going to look like for you, because you can tell somebody, you know, I don't feel like being bothered right now. But what does that actually look like? Do you not want them to call you? Do you not want them to text you? Do you not want them to send you stuff on Instagram or social media? Like, you know, when you say it, you don't want to be bothered, what is that going to look like? So, mm-hmm. you know, so write those things down. You know, if you feel that you need time to yourself, what is that going to look like? Are you wanting to go out maybe to Target for an hour just to go around each aisle? You might not buy a few things, but it's Target. But, but you know, you can do that. You know, tell them, okay, I feel like I need a break. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to get my nails done. I'm going to get a haircut. You know, I'm going shopping. But, you know, I want to create this time for me. You know, what I tell my clients, especially the ones that come in and say, you know, I don't have time for myself. You know, I'm always doing things for other people. But what about me? You know, I tell them right now, you need to acknowledge the fact that you're in therapy for these 50, 60 minutes. And this is time for you where you mm-hmm. can, you know, talk about things that's going on, process it, you know, have your own time, come up with a game plan to go out there and do what you need to do. And so sometimes we do things that's as far as self-care, but we so, you know, entangled with our lives, we don't feel like it is. And so maybe it's sometimes just, you know, looking at what we do on a daily basis to say, you know, can I just carve out a few minutes instead of scrolling on social media for 10, 20 minutes? I can then put that time maybe into reading a book, doing meditation, spending time with your family or friends, or, you know, reconnecting with them. But, you know, just look at how you can tailor some of that time that you already have to have for yourself. And it might be a situation where you might have to take 5 minutes. It might be your life where you say, I could just carve out 5 minutes for myself. Mm-hmm. That's 5 minutes that you have for yourself, and take that opportunity. Some people could, you know, extend that, and it could be more time. It could be a day. You could go on vacation. But still, make sure that I don't want you to feel that, you know, I have to take an hour and do something. It could be 5, 10 minutes. It can mm-hmm. be watching something on TV, you know, that you don't have to really think about. It can make you laugh, or, you know, put you in a different headspace. And, you know, that could be something that can be considered as far as self-care. But I think as far as the boundaries is concerned, you know, write them out, you know, define what they are, and then have those conversations with your family members, your friends, you know, your partner, you know, your job. Even sometimes we have to put priorities and boundaries in place with our job and mm-hmm. tell, you know, our bosses, you know, I'm going to work Monday through Thursday, but Friday, I'm just going to, you know, take a mental health day. Some people have those days, or just have an off day, or maybe, you know, delegate some tasks so you can have more time to yourself to put more into some other things that you have to do. And so mm-hmm. it's just, you know, trying to tailor that time and to see exactly what you're going to do with that time. And sometimes you might take 5 minutes just to sit down and do nothing. And so, you know, that's important as well, because, you know, we don't always have to do something as far as self-care. We could just sit in our car and listen to music, or sit in silence. And all of those things do count. And so, you know, just acknowledging the fact that, you know, you can do something that's very simple, or you can, you know, do something that, you know, takes up more of your time. But it all depends on how much time you're willing to take and what you're going to do with that time.
How often should we just completely unplug from the whole world for self-care?
Well, that's individualized. I can't tell you that.
Like, I hear some people say, you know, once a month, they they pick a day where it's just like the phone is off. I'm not checking any emails, social media, anything. Some people say, you know, once a year they take a trip for a week where they just unplug from the world. But I was wondering, you know, from a mental health standpoint, like, is that something that more people should be trying to make the time to do, to just completely unplug from the world and just spend time with themselves, taking care of their mind, taking care of their emotions and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good for everybody because, you know, we don't always have to be on our phones, on our computers, on social media. We can spend that time doing other things. Me personally, I love going on vacation where there's limited access to my phone. You know, the internet's not working or I have to go in a certain area to use my phone. I like that because, you know, I can be more present. And that's, you know, the important thing to think about when we think about our phones, when we think about social media, we're not being present. We're thinking about other things. We're, you know, into other business or having all these tabs open. But we have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, especially with this pandemic, life is happening, you know, whether we, you know, with it or not, life is happening and it's slowed down a lot for a lot of us. And so, you know, we have to take those moments where we need to be more present, more here in the now, and not, you know, trying to be boggled down by, you know, other things that's going on in the outside world. And so, you know, mental health breaks as far as with, you know, social media. I think it's, you know, it's a good thing, you know, whether you do it, you know, starting off maybe 1 hour, you know, instead of you saying, okay, usually I'm on social media for 3 hours. I'm going to scale it back to maybe, you know, 2.5 or 2 hours and see, you know, what you do with your time. But, you know, some people can go ahead and say, I'm going to take a month off of social media. More power to them. I'm going to do that one day. I'm going to try.
I've done it before. I haven't done it recently. I have done it before. And I can say after the first couple of days, you don't even notice it anymore. Like the first day, just out of habit, you're gonna pick your phone up and you're like, oh, that's right, I said I'm gonna chill. Yeah. But like day three, day four, day five, you've already found something to replace it. You know, like the times that I did it, I tried to read more, you know, or I was trying to get out and do whatever it was, you know. So just you have to find something to supplement that time, because otherwise your phone is just magically gonna come back in your hand.
And like you said, you know, finding things to supplement that time. And so that's, you know, prior to you going on that, you know, social media hiatus, say, you know, what are some things I used to do, you know, do without social media? What's some things that I want to pick back up? And, you know, you can have a list of coping skills or hobbies that you do that you can say, when I pick up my phone, I'm going to do something else instead. And so, you know, having that game plan before you, you know, implement something like that can also help you to extend your time that you need.
And for those that don't know exactly what they would replace it with, if you need something, you can always stream the Successes Within Reach podcast on all major platforms. Shameless plug. All right. But I'm definitely, you know, I agree with everything you said, especially the part about setting those boundaries with your job. I see so many people literally work themselves to death. And I'm like, you were exhausted months ago or weeks ago. Like, take some time off, especially those that have paid time off. Why are you giving it back at the end of the year? You know, I'm like, you need a mental health break. Something happened with your kids. Something happened in your relationship. You lost somebody in your family. Like, your job is going to be okay. I don't care who your boss is. And they're telling you they need you to do A through Z. I'm telling you, your job will be okay. Because guess what? If you run yourself in the ground and end up in the hospital, that job is still running. Exactly. So make sure that you're taking those days off, you know, whether it's one day a month or a week every couple of months, whatever the case may be, to just unplug from your job, take care of yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, you know, reconnect with your kids, reconnect with your significant other, whatever the case may be. Because your job will be okay, I promise you.
Yes, because I used to feel guilty with taking off from work. I'm like, I'm trying to save my days for whatever reason. But, you know, I felt guilty. Like, I always feel like even if I take off, they're going to need me anyway. And so, you know, in the last few years, I've gotten to the habit to say, you know, when I take off, I take off. And then also, you know, with my child, you know, he doesn't have to have perfect attendance. We can have a day out, you know, we can play hooky and, you know, do things and just be home. And, you know, that's, you know, good for kids too. I heard, you know, I read recently, I don't know what state it was in, but they're giving kids mental health days now. And so, you know, those are some things to take into consideration, because as we see, kids don't have to be in the school 24/7. I mean, 5 days a week, you know, you know, they're being virtual now, you know, you don't have to be at your house. You can be somewhere else while they're virtual. So, you know, there's different ways that they can still have that education. And so, you know, making sure that you check on your kids too and check on their boundaries as well, because, you know, being on a computer every day can take a toll on anybody. And so, you know, check in with them as well as far as their boundaries too.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you have to just break it down and think about it. If the president can take a vacation, if Bill Gates can take a vacation, if Jeff Bezos can take a vacation, and they're responsible for millions of people, I promise you, you can take a day off and your job will be okay. All right. So you mentioned the pandemic. And I also wanted to ask a question in regards to that. You know, a lot of people are now, since the vaccine has come out, a lot of jobs are saying, okay, we can start bringing people back into the office. Well, a lot of people still aren't cool with that. You know, they're like, hey, I don't know if that's a good thing. We've been working from home. Why do you all need us back in the office? I don't think that's cool right now. So for those that are coming back in, what are some things that supervisors and administrators can do to kind of help ease the tensions and improve their employees' mental and emotional well-being as they reluctantly return to the office?
I think first acknowledging, you know, the common and general issues and the fact that, you know, we all, you all have to return back, you know, to the office for, you know, whatever reasons, but, you know, making sure that you put things in place to help support, you know, your employees. I say, you know, create, you know, a professional development day where, you know, it's all about mental health. So, you know, maybe once a month or once a quarter, have those, you know, those sessions with your, you know, your staff, where you might have a therapist on site, you might have a massage person there, you might, you know, have someone where, you know, it's not really boggled down into work, but things that they can do on the outside to try to assist them, because, you know, you, like I'm sure many people have heard, you can't pour from an empty cup. And so the more you pour into your employees to making sure that they are, you know, mentally equipped to handle their work, whether they're working from home or in the office, the better, you know, that they are, you know, with their productivity. And so, you know, possibly doing a survey with your employees to say, you know, if we put, you know, things to help with your mental health, you know, in place, or, you know, to help with easing back into working back in the office, what is that going to look like? What are some of the ideas that you have in implementing some of those things? Because that's how you get, you know, your employee buy-in, is to, you know, listen to them, hear them out, and then implement some things that you know will, you know, be successful in your company. You know, something I mentioned is to bring a therapist on site, you know, maybe quarterly or once a month. You know, most companies have employee assistance programs, in which that's something else that they can acknowledge with their staff, is the fact that, you know, people can go to a therapist, you know, on the company's dime for a few sessions. It's still confidential, so your employer won't know what you're talking about when you go to therapy. But, you know, it can be, you know, a tool that you can use to then get yourself into therapy on a regular basis. But, you know, you can start off with those free sessions, you know, outside of the workplace, and, you know, get a feel for therapy, and then move into something that will be able to, you know, continue to help you, you know, individually, so you can be better at your job.
Shout out to the jobs that do have an EAP program. Like, I think that's so dope. I feel like everybody should have an EAP program. I understand some people are just too cheap to do it. I mean, I just call it what it is.
Exactly.
But I feel like so many people should have it. I know definitely most state and federal government companies have EAP programs. You know, and like you said, you can get a few sessions in for free. You know, your job, you know, your employer would take care of the cost and everything. And, you know, it's a really dope way for those that are trying to find someone. You can use those free sessions to, okay, I'm gonna try this person out. try this person out, try this person out. And then whoever you like the best, that's who you go start seeing when it's time for you to start paying for it.
Exactly.
You know, so use those different resources that you have, you know, around you. And I know for a while, Anthem had a program where you could contact them and they would come into different job sites and talk about different, you know, mental or emotional well-being topics mm-hmm. and everything, and do trainings with supervisors and administrators as well. You know, so definitely I say reach out to your HR if you're not sure if your job has it or not, you know, and use those resources. I mean, you can't beat free 99.
Exactly. Especially on how much therapists cost sometimes.
Exactly.
Get those free sessions.
Oh, man. All right. One last question I have for you before we start wrapping up this episode. For the high school or the college student that says, you know, I want to be a therapist, I want to be a counselor, I want to be a mental health professional, what is one great piece of advice that you have for them?
One great advice that I wish I would have known is to learn a business side about, you know, getting into the field. It's not something that's really discussed, you know, when you're in school. And so it takes you getting out in the field and then finding out different aspects and in different avenues that you can take as far as being in a mental health profession. So I say, you know, learn a business side. If you want to, you know, be a program director, if you want to have your own private practice, knowing how to work with those insurance companies, the taxes behind that, you know, having your own office, what the cost is, and, you know, having and how to get there, your own clients. And I think, you know, just maybe having a class just on, you know, how to maneuver, you know, the mental health field when you're trying to, you know, have your own private practice or just, you know, doing a business out of mental health can really be an eye opener for a lot of people.
I love it. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, Christina Leslie, she came through another phenomenal episode.
Thank you.
This season, she will actually be back twice. So she'll be back in a few months. We'll have her back. So make sure you get your questions in. If you don't feel comfortable putting them live on the podcast, you can send them to the podcast page on Facebook. Again, it's www.facebook.com/SIWR podcast. Just shoot your questions and your messages in there, and I'll make sure that I get them added on the air the next time she's here. All right. So we have come to the part of the show where I leave you all with this week's mind shift moment. For season 3, I'm doing something a little different. Usually I come up with the mind shift moment, but for this season, sometimes I'll do it. Sometimes I'll give you all a video clip. And this week I'm doing a video clip. I saw a video that Will Smith did. I thought it was pretty dope. And it's applicable to some of the things that we talked about with overcoming traumas and different things in your life. So this week's mind shift moment, here we go.
I was just having a debate with a friend of mine, and we got stuck on the difference between fault and responsibility. She kept talking about how something was somebody's fault. It's somebody's fault. I was like, it don't matter whose fault it is that something is broken if it's your responsibility to fix it. For example, it's not somebody's fault if their father was an abusive alcoholic, but it's for damn sure their responsibility to figure out how they're going to deal with those traumas and try to make a life out of it. It's not your fault if your partner cheated and ruined your marriage, but it is for damn sure your responsibility to figure out how to take that pain and how to overcome that and build a happy life for yourself. And responsibility do not go together. It sucks, but they don't. When something is somebody's fault, we want them to suffer. We want them punished. We want them.
All right. I'm not going to play the whole video clip, but it is this week's mind shift moment. You know, like he said, and I couldn't agree more. It's not about fault and responsibility. Like in life, you cannot choose what happens to you. You can't choose what somebody says to you, does to you. You can only choose how you respond to it. You know, in life, you're either going to be the victim or you're going to be the victor. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's all a matter of perspective, and it's a matter of how long you allow yourself to address said situation and then make the decision to move on from it. You know, so think about that clip as you go about your day, as you go about your week, you know, and you think about things that upset you, things from your past, things that happen in your present. You know, it's not always about whose fault it is. Whose responsibility is it for you to move on from it? It's yours, ultimately. Mm-hmm. They may not apologize. They may not say anything else to you after that point, but it's your responsibility to not let it affect you from here on out, completely ruin your day, completely ruin your life, completely ruin your relationship, or whatever the case may be. And that is this week's Mind Shift Moment. Once again, I want to thank my guest, Ms. Christina Leslie. This has been, again, an awesome, awesome, awesome episode.
Thank you.
Super incredible topic. Like I said, mental health is something that I can't do enough shows about, I swear. Once again, this is the Successes Within Reach podcast, season 3, episode 2, Mental Health Matters. Please make sure that you listen, subscribe, and now you can even leave ratings on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. All you have to do is search SIWR Podcast, and I will see you all next Thursday with another dope guest as we help you create the blueprint to your success. This is the Successes Within Reach podcast, where we remind you, you are not designed to be good, you were designed to be great. And with that, I say have a good night.
Bye.